So welcome back. We're going to roll into our executive order presentation from Dr. Cornyn. Moving into our next agenda item with the executive order 14276, we're going to have a presentation from Dr. Cornyn, a little brief explanation of how we're going to move forward from this from Dr. O'Keefe, and then we'll go through the process of how we address what has come out of the executive committee as recommendations related to this executive order. So I'll pass it over to you, Dr. Cornyn.
Good morning, everyone. As you recall from your meeting in June, we talked briefly about Executive Order 14276. And in that order, there is a request from the Secretary of Commerce to each regional fishery council to update their recommendations from a previous executive order to reduce burdens on domestic fishing and to increase production. But this executive order goes a little further and builds on those goals and also asks to identify actions that could stabilize markets, improve access, enhance economic profitability, and prevent closures. And you're tasked with committing to a work plan and a schedule for implementation. So since the June Council meeting, we've been working to gather input and develop a draft work plan for your consideration. Again, we are looking for input that identified those actions listed in the executive order. And our process was to request specific input from the plan development teams and the advisory panel members on potential actions that address one or more of those goals. We also received written comments from the public directly to the council. And the executive committee reviewed a compilation of all the comments received by the council from its AP members, the public, and the PDTs, and also a compilation of comments sent directly to NOAA Fisheries. And this included input about in a certain section, the New England Council. A summary of PDT input was compiled following the executive committee meeting, and that's provided with your packet today. And we also did receive additional public comments since the executive committee met, and that's also provided in your materials. So just a quick recap of the timeline. This executive order was signed on April 17th. You talked about this at your June meeting. We sent an email out to all current AP members asking them to provide their individual input on this executive order. And we also sent them a reminder. The PDTs also work by correspondence or scheduled meetings to talk through potential input. And we compiled all this together and prepared a summary for the executive committee. So here today, you're going to be considering the executive committee recommendations and approve your final list. And just a reminder that this the recommendations are due to NOAA by September 30th. So briefly, an overview of the input we received from advisory panel members. And this is, again, input is requested from individual members. And we do have one member that serves on two of our advisory panels, so that's why there's a little note there. So in total, we received 11 submissions across all our advisory panels from individual members. Notably, these came from the recreational, scallop, herring, habitat, whiting, and enforcement APs. So some of the example input, specific examples that we received from those folks included increased access to cod, allowing access to the northern edge, modifying permit restrictions, removing various requirements in the herring fishery, including VMS landing requirements, and reestablishing IFM. Our member who sits on two APs supported rescinding the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts Marine Monument, commercial fishing restrictions, a moratorium on wind, among other ideas. There was some of the AP members in Habitat that did respond to this. We're interested in rescinding all HAPCs, increasing access for scallop and clam fisheries, for small mesh, There was an interest in creating a set of subsidies that could help the fishery, including for packaging and fuel, and expanding a USD program that helps support communities and fishermen, seeking fair trade measures, specifically when there's more Canadian imports. And then we also had one person encourage the development of aquaculture. Our plan development teams met either by meeting or correspondence, and they had a lot of examples, and so we tried to pull a collection of those for the council meeting. Groundfish was interested in input to revise the sector program, reviewing possession limits, reclassifying some stocks as ecosystem component, and removing outdated regulations, among other recommendations, or excuse me, input. Scallops talked about defining management areas that could open or close based on a predefined trigger. This came out of the work on the scallop strategic plan. Modifying VMS requirements and taking a review of the possession regulations between groundfish and scallops. For monkfish, there's interest in providing input on evaluating a joint monkfish skate as a single fishery management plan and reviewing permit categories and revising requirements under those categories. Note here that none of these lists in the presentation or in the packet are meant to be exhaustive, but representative of the discussions of the PDTs, and it does not necessarily represent consensus by the plan development teams. It was an opportunity to provide input. With herring, some of the input provided, including revising the specifications formula and the harvest control rule, modifying non-target measures. Those are measures for river herring, shad, and haddock. Revising or removing outdated regulations in habitat. They didn't suggest any revisions, but in doing so, they're not commenting and they're remaining neutral. For skates, developing a performance trigger to increase skate possession limits, adjusting or consider adjusting the timing of the skate wing seasons, and modifying, I think that should say LOA, the bait letter of authorization. For whiting, evaluating and modifying and potentially modifying exemption areas, evaluate and potentially standardize incidental species limits, consider removing the requirement for a letter of authorization for exemption areas, and taking an evaluation of accountability measures for red hake. All right. So the next section focuses on the comments that the executive committee and then the council received that were written public comments. And so in time for the executive committee's discussion, five letters were sent, and those are the ones you see in dark blue. And then for the council meeting, by the comment period deadline, there were four additional letters received. So in total, the council has received nine letters of public comment, written public comment. So looking across those nine letters, this is some of the input received, specific examples. Not everything is here, but just to give you an idea of some of the things that were mentioned in the letters. And now this is organized by general topic, so FMP or overall FMP ideas. So for groundfish, there was input to end sector leasing, reduce observer costs. One idea was to use artificial intelligence, invest in communities, and continue to support the recreational bioeconomic model. In herring, there was a difference of view, one wanting to revise and remove certain measures in the herring fishery, including slippage and consequence measures, and access to groundfish closed areas by not requiring a carrying observer, and eliminating industry-funded monitoring, and ending the work on Amendment 10. And there was an alternative view presented to not change any of the herring regulations in response to the executive order and restart work on Amendment 10. For scallops, there was input provided to allow for access to the northern edge and also to the western side of the channel and improve technology around closure boundaries. And there were some ideas presented on how you might use more modern technology to determine when a vessel is in or out of an area. for habitat input, allowing dredging of surf clams and mussels in the Great South Channel HMA. And then this other category, which lots of different input provided, but one of them was to simplify the council system. This person felt like it was too complex and too burdensome. To reverse commercial fishing restrictions in the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts National Marine Monument, a moratorium on offshore wind, increase the use of industry-based surveys, and there were mentions of science and data collection, including partnering on data collection with industry, and then supporting CEFI. All right. So when the executive committee met, they developed recommendations, and those were based on all the input it received at the time, as well as thinking about the availability of staff and budget resources. And in order to put these recommendations into categories, we developed four different bins for each of the recommendations. And I want to thank the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council for going first, because this was their idea to use these four bins, and we borrowed that from them. So first, we looked at council actions that are currently in the NOAA fisheries rulemaking process. Second, council actions currently under development. Third, possible new council actions. And then four, non-council actions that are recommendations to federal agencies. I'm going to focus more of the presentation on number three, because those would be new actions that you potentially would be recommending as part of your work plan. And a recap of one and two, those are things that you're already working on or have worked on. And again, four is for non-council recommendations. So actions currently under a slide is missing, but that's okay. So council actions in the NOAA fisheries rulemaking process, those two include ones that you've already talked about today. That includes number one, the Northeast Multi-Species Groundfish Framework 69, which does not have a proposed rule, and the Atlantic Herring Specifications for 2025 through 2027, which did go through the proposed rulemaking process, and public comment period is now closed, and final rulemaking is pending. So council actions currently under development that you're working on now include the Omnibus Management Flexibility Amendment, actions to set specifications for monkfish and skates, spiny dogfish framework adjustment for accountability measure and specifications, the scallop strategic plan, the ecosystem components evaluation, and modernizing approaches to governance. New council actions include, and I'll walk through these in a little bit more detail, modification to vessel baseline restrictions, Atlantic herring slippage measures, monkfish management modifications, revisions to reactive accountability measures, and fishery management plan revisions. So the first one, and here's that slide that got misplaced. Thank you, PowerPoint. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, the modifications to vessel baseline restrictions. So the first one on this list is the issue is we've been hearing from industry that the current restrictions are too challenging. So when they're going to either replace their vessels or engines, it's very difficult to meet those requirements. And so this action would be in coordination with the regional office to evaluate the current restrictions and consider joint action with the Mid-Atlantic Council to explore modification to the requirements. The rationale for this is that it could increase flexibility for permit holders seeking to upgrade or replace aging vessels within the overall fleet capacity that the council specified, and lead to safer and more efficient operations and reduce barriers to modernization. Again, this one would be something that the two councils would need to work on together with GARFO. For Atlantic herring slippage measures, the issue here is that herring vessels must relocate if it has a slippage event for specified reasons, and for other reasons, they may even have to terminate the trip and return to port. But many of these reasons are operational and difficult to avoid. So the action here would be to evaluate the necessity and utility of this regulation and consider including a deregulatory measure in a future Atlantic Herring Fishery Management Plan action. And these events triggering the move-along requirement, moving along to 15 nautical miles, are largely beyond the control of the vessel, and the need does not have a strong biological or operational basis. Removal of these consequence and slippage requirements supports more efficient fishing operations and reduces the burdens that are imposed on industry because of them, including costs. The third one here is the monkfish management modifications. And this issue is that days at sea that are used in the northern and southern monkfish areas are also bound to groundfish and scallop days at sea, which can lead into a situation where you're actually limiting the areas vessels can access in a single trip and increase the reporting requirements. The idea here is that we would develop a white paper to evaluate how the monkfish fishery interacts with these other fisheries and consider approaches that may decouple monkfish from groundfish and the scallop regulations. The rationale is that modifications could reduce unnecessary restrictions, improve access to the fishery, and support more efficient resource use. The fourth on the list is revisions to reactive accountability measures. And the issue here is we have pound-for-pound paybacks that can result in once an annual catch limit has been exceeded in 1 year, and it's reducing the catch in a future year. Catch limit. But there may be some circumstances where the stock is doing well above its biomass target, for example, where paybacks could be considered unnecessary and overly burdensome to meet conservation management goals. So the action here would be to evaluate the effectiveness of the pound-for-pound paybacks in preventing overfishing and considering the examples provided in the spiny dogfish accountability measures framework adjustment. And applying that across the council's fishery management plans. Rationale here is that these modifications could minimize negative socioeconomic disruptions while continuing to maintain sustainability for council management resources. And last on this list is fishery management plan revisions. And this is the issue here is that many of the council's FMPs have outdated regulations. When the plan development teams discussed input for the executive order, they developed a lot of lists of potential existing regulations that maybe are no longer necessary or effective, or regulations that could also be streamlined. The action here would be to remove the outdated and irrelevant regulations through plan framework adjustments, either standalone action or individual actions, and then through a rulemaking, or in some cases through a rulemaking package. And by removing these unnecessary and overly restrictive regulations, this could reduce burdens on the fishing industry, increase access, and enhance economic profitability. Some of the examples provided in the summary include the Flexible Area Action Plan, which is in place in the groundfish plan but never been implemented or used. And then also another example is in herring, there is a river herring and shad monitoring and areas that are not used at all right now in management. Okay, so that concludes the council-related actions. This section now focuses on the non-council actions, and these would be recommending federal agencies to do something related to the council's work. So I won't spend a whole lot of time on these five, but there are details included in the executive committee's memo. One is really reaffirming an older council recommendation, which is seafood and marketing and promotion, elevating the role of U.S. seafood to the consumer, as well as explaining the benefits of that over imported seafood, but through a coordinated process. There's some recommendations on how to do that. Continuing monitoring and scientific programs of the fishery, including new technologies, partnering with industry, continuing to support surveys, collection of data, processing of that, and all the way through to scientific stock assessments. The recreational bioeconomic model has been used for over a decade by the council to develop measures for both cod and haddock on an annual basis. These are the bag limits, the seasons, the fish size, and that work is done through the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, and the council would like to see that work continue. The Changing Environment and Fisheries Initiative, also the council would like to see that work in this recommendation, if the council were to make it, continue and to be bolstered going forward. And last is the categorical exclusions under the National Environmental Policy Act. One of our staff is working closely with one of the CCC subgroups to on NEPA to try and develop new approaches to how we work on fisheries management. And categorical exclusions are one that we're taking a harder look at. And so we think that the council may wish to support that ongoing effort. There's some more details in the executive committee's memo on this one as well. All right. So at the executive committee, there were some questions about what happens after the letter is prepared with the council's recommendations and sent over. And the executive director shared that she intends to ask for specific guidance at the October Council Coordination Committee meeting on next steps in the process and a timeline for the responses, and will provide an update to the council in December. And second, as you may have already picked up on, there is a need to coordinate with the Mid-Atlantic Council and the region and the center, depending on the recommendations that the council decides to put forward. And this could be a topic for discussion at the upcoming November Northeast Region Coordinating Council meeting. And the third item on the list is, you may be aware that NOAA Fisheries is also accepting public comments on this executive order until October 14th. They're holding a public listening session. One is on the 25th and another on October 1st. Last thing to let you know before take any questions is, I'm not going to present them, but at the last seven slides of this presentation include all the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council's recommendations. So if you are interested in seeing what they recommended and how that may overlap with the things that the executive committee recommended, it is provided to you for reference. With that, Mr. Chair, I could take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cornain. We're just going to take questions at this point. We will get into discussion and motions, but I just want to have questions now for Dr. Cornain. Jeff Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations on your ascension to the head seat up there. Jamie, I had a question. So assuming we move some of these forward, and whatever happens with guidance from how to move forward on the EOs, I'm curious about if on the recommendations from the executive committee, there was any effort given to try to estimate the time, the council staff time that might be needed to complete the things that the executive committee was recommending that we include on the list.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. There certainly was consideration of the way these recommendations were phrased around the idea of explorations, white paper, evaluations, and not necessarily initiate an action. We felt that we wanted to take an approach where we could kind of have a stepwise, partly related to staff timing. So we haven't estimated the exact amount of staff time that would be required for these, but I think I understand the intent of your question, Mr. Smith, in terms of thinking about these responses to the executive order in coordination with our overall 2026 priority setting process, and where we would consider things like multi-year priorities or not initiating something until a future year, 2027 or 2028. So we don't have an exact estimate of the staff time required for each of the proposals here, recognizing that staff time would be a little bit flexible based on exactly where the council goes with this response.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It makes it a little bit challenging to figure out whether we would want to move, for me as a council member, whether we would want to move the whole list forward, or whether we might want to be more judicious with what we put forward if it's creating an additional workload for our staff. That, you know, we've already delayed action on Amendment 10 and the Herring Plan, so we could do other things this year. I would be concerned that if we included the slippage provision as one of the things, that it might take staff time away from being able to continue work on Amendment 10. That's just an example, but To the extent we can get any more information on how much staff time it will take and how it will impact our priorities in 2026, that'd be appreciated. But what you just provided was helpful, so thanks.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thanks. I do want to just mention one follow-up. The IRA projects, that was a separate type of initiative, but it came with additional funds. This is at requesting that the council respond in some way, identify topics to be addressed. There are no additional funds, so this work largely will fall upon staff with existing budget and resources.
Jackie O'Dell.
Thanks. So Dr. O'Keefe explained to me the careful usage of the language, which I really appreciate, evaluate our white papers before there'd actually be potentially an action taken. So that's very helpful. Thanks. But one quick question. This is a low-hanging fruit, and it was, you know, I just was reminded of it when I was looking at some of the AP recommendations. I was curious under 4.1, which is the seafood marketing and promotion, if there was any discussion by the executive committee on, support for purchasing programs. I saw it under a recommendation under small mesh. And there was also, we know with groundfish, it's actually been really vital having some of these USDA programs and purchasing programs. So, I believe I had read under the executive order that those type of purchasing programs didn't go into any detail, but I think it would fall nicely under the seafood marketing and promotion and be kind of a low-hanging fruit for the council to support USDA programs moving forward. Many folks in the industry are doing everything they can to get those programs to be able to create more stable markets for groundfish stocks, and it's nice to see they're thinking about it for small mesh and for whiting as well. Thanks.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you for the, the question. I'll answer that was not specifically discussed, but when we get to discussion, if that's a topic that we'd like to add, then thanks for the mention.
Ted Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. I may be incorrect in my operating assumption on this, but I was of the impression that we were putting together a list to send to NOAA on regulations that we wanted to see removed or reduced or modified in some way. And I guess I'm looking for clarification as to whether or not this is going to take a lot of council staff time, which was not my impression because I thought it was getting sort of shipped out, so to speak. Could you just clarify for me, how this process is working? Is it all of one or the other or a mixed bag?
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. So what we were requested to do as councils was to provide a list of things that met the objectives of the executive order with the intent that the council would be doing the work, that we would set forth a work plan and take actions to do all of this. So, yes, we're being told to do a lot more work.
No more questions from the council. I will kick it over to Dr. O'Keefe to kind of walk us through how we're going to go about this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So similar to the way that we take action for our annual priority setting process is how we're going to approach the executive order. So there is a memo from the executive committee to the council with a set of proposed recommendations. we will consider that, council will consider that, and then we will take motions to amend, to insert, remove, revise anything on that list. So as we move forward, if you're interested in making a motion to amend, we ask that you try to use the language "move to amend Executive Order 14276 list" by adding and include what you'd like to add, deleting, or revising. And we will work through the amendments one by one and vote on them as a council. And we have a list that everyone is comfortable with as amended, we will take final action, and that would be the list that we would respond to the executive order request with. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe. So to kick us off, we have a motion from Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. So just to get something on the board that we can start doing any amendments to, I would move that the council adopts the executive committee's recommendations for executive order 14276, restoring American seafood competitiveness, as detailed in the September 12, 2025 executive committee memo to the council. And if there's a second, I do have some rationale.
Looking for a second, Jackie O'Dell.
So NOAA requested the council provide potential actions that address one or more of the EO's stated goals: reduce burdens on domestic fishing, increase production, stabilize markets, improve access, enhance economic profitability, or prevent closures. And the council is providing this response in consideration of input from its plan development teams, advisory panel members, and public comment.
Any additional rationale, Ms. O'Dell?
No, that's fine.
Okay, so we have a motion on the board with a second. I'm understanding that there may be some people that want to add, subtract, modify, what have you. So now this is the time for any council members to bring a motion to amend. Mr. Lucy.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move to amend the council's recommendations on Executive Order 14276, restoring American seafood competitiveness, to remove the consideration of the herring slippage item.
While we get that typed up, do we have a second? Mr. Smith seconding. Rationale?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the rationales for that item was that there was no biological impact of removing that regulation, or I guess we're not necessarily removing at this point, but discussing, but I don't think that's a correct rationale. If you are going to slip a net that's full of undersized herring or river herring or haddock, I think that has clear, significant biological impacts, in addition to the fact that we are going to be working, hopefully, again on Amendment 10. I would hate to see staff resources that are directed to herring focus on this particular item, where we should be looking forward to our framework adjustments and Amendment 10 in the coming year. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Smith?
No, I think Bill captured it well. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion to amend. Any comments, questions? Seeing none from the council, anyone from the public have any questions or comments to the motion to amend? Mr. Jeff Kalin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations, Dan, on your appointment, you too, Melanie. I'm Jeff Kalin with Lunds Fisheries. We were optimistic that some change to the herring regulations could occur today. This is kind of a spanking type of a regulation, frankly, in our mind, just like having to take an observer in the multi-species closed areas is, since we don't fish on the bottom and we don't take ground fish. So I was hoping that we'd see that on the list, but clearly we're opposed to this. I mean, we need a break somewhere. This is one of the most heavily regulated fisheries in New England, and really there's not even a fishery now, so of any consequence. So this is just an irritant, And there's no evidence that we're releasing large amounts of river herring or Atlantic herring or anything else in this fishery. So we need to stay focused on facts. And I would like to see this stay in. I guess I'll just leave it at that at this point, because there'll be an opportunity to speak to some of the other issues on the executive committee's list, hopefully in a few minutes. So I'm opposed to this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kalin. Dr. Fuller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Erica Fuller from Conservation Law Foundation, and adding my congratulations to all of you. I'd like to speak in favor of this amendment. I don't have a lot of comments prepared, but this was a robust public process to get some accountability in this fishery, and all of these measures were debated for years, and I think it deserves the same kind of process if for any reason it would be undone. And thank you for your time.
Seeing any no more comments, questions from the room, I'll go online. I have Sean Gingan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I would oppose the amended motion for the reasons that Mr. Kalin said. And also, I would like to speak to the petition to reopen the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area. Would this be the time, or will I have another opportunity?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Mary Beth Tooley online. We have you unmuted on this end, Mary Beth.
There we go. Can you hear me now, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Fortunately, I was having trouble finding the unmute button. But anyway, I did want to comment on this item because I do think it's important. When the slippage measures went into place, there were comments made to the agency about the safety issues that arise. And certainly, to avoid slippage, you need to bring the cod end aboard intact. So that is not logistically feasible on every vessel. For example, O'Hara has two vessels, one that has a crane on deck and one that does not. And the one that does not would require the crew to hang over the side of the vessel in various kinds of weather and for an exercise that really has very little value. Every gear type used in the fishery, whether it be a purse seine or a midwater trawl, has fish that remain in the net at the end of pumping. Because the pump will only pick up so much fish and so much water, when it becomes mostly water, they let the end go. It doesn't matter if you're a small purse seine, a large purse seine, small trawl, or a large midwater trawl. It's all the same. When you're doing a volume fishery and you're using a pump, it's just not feasible. So people's ideas of all these, things that occur, they don't occur. It's just simply not true. This would just be an easy regulatory change with no conservation loss and certainly a benefit to the industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tooley. Seeing no other hands in the room or online, I will come back to the council. Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So part of the justification for removing this out of the executive order was because we are going to reevaluate priorities for herring in 2026, and that this could be included in council staff discussions for a future herring action. Is that what I wanted a little bit more clarification on that rationale. It would be helpful for me to understand that.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So the proposal from the Executive Committee to the Council is that the Council could evaluate the necessity and utility of this regulation and considering a deregulatory measure in a future herring action plan. The intent there is that if this is included in our response to the executive order, that we would conduct that evaluation of the necessity and utility of the regulation, and then it would be at the Council's purview to decide whether or not we want to take a future action.
Seeing no other hands, sorry about that. Seeing no other hands, just come to a roll call vote. So whenever you're ready, Dr. O'Keefe.
When I call your name, please say yes, no, or abstain to the motion on the board. Mr. Aristad.
Yes.
Ms. Braun.
No.
Ms. O'Dell.
No.
Mr. Hansen.
No.
Mr. Lucy.
Yes.
Ms. O'Bell.
Yes.
Ms. Ware.
No.
Ms. Griffin.
Yes.
Mr. Olszewski.
No.
Mr. Pappalardo.
Yes.
Mr. Pierdnak?
Yes.
Mr. Penny?
No.
Mr. Platts?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. D'Angelo?
No.
Mr. Whalen?
Yes.
The motion stands right now, 8 yes, 8 no, with 0 abstentions. I'd ask the chair if he wants to vote.
I will abstain.
Motion fails for a lack of a consensus, lack of a majority.
Any other motions for the executive order, motions to amend? Ted Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have a motion to add. We have move to amend the EO 14276 list by adding consideration to request that the season for the Southern New England Dogfish Exemption Area be expanded from May 1 through October 31. To April 1 through November 31, and to add to the allowable species possession list bluefish and sea bass. If I get a second, I'll give a rationale.
There a second for Mr. Platts's motion? Scott Olszewski. Rationale, Ted?
Yeah, the migratory habits of various species have changed. I worked with Dave Borden to get this exemption put in to allow fishermen to fish for dogfish during this time of year, but the dogfish are showing up earlier and staying later. That is the purpose of this. I'm not sure why bluefish and sea bass weren't on the original one. I have fishermen from Rhode Island telling me that they are catching bluefish in November. We just want to make sure that people have the opportunity to pursue smaller mess fish while out monk fishing typically, and this expansion of the season gives them greater access to fish that they're already seeing. Thank you.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. Just a clarification for the maker of the motion. As noted, these will be recommendations for actions that the Council will take. So just for potential clarification in the language here, suggesting possibly just rewording to include first that that the New England Council would request collaboratively from the Mid-Atlantic Council as the Spiny Dogfish lead, as well as Bluefish and Seabass lead, to consider developing an action to change the season. Basically, just to clarify again, these are sort of self-tasks. We're not asking NOAA to do this. That's not what the executive order entails. It's these would be, we would have to initiate an action to do this. I'm not trying to change the intent of this at all, just trying to clarify that not being the lead on this would want to work with the Mid-Atlantic Council, and that the way to do this would be that we would be developing an action. Just want to make sure that's okay with the maker and seconder.
Are you set with that, Ted?
That's fine.
Okay. Scott?
I am. Thank you for the clarification.
Questions on the motion to amend? Jeff Smith?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Dr. O'Keefe kind of raised the question that I had. I wasn't sure who we were going to request to do this to, or as Dr. O'Keefe mentioned, most of the other things that are on this list, we're saying let's evaluate the possibility of doing something. And so I think if we can just wait and see the amended language to the amended proposal, I'll be okay with it. But I just wanted to know who we were asking.
Is that helpful, Mr. Smith? Ms. Ware?
Thanks. I think a question maybe for Jamie. I'm not seeing this on the backup slides for the Mid-Atlantic Council, so just looking to confirm this wasn't on the Mid-Atlantic Council's list, or if there was any discussion of this by the Mid-Atlantic Council.
Sorry. Dr. Corney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just rereading some notes here. So their process at the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council was they had an open public comment period, and they received a number of comments from the public, and then their staff sat down and looked at all those comments and developed their own staff recommendations in a memo similar to ours. And no, this was not something that they had on their list, and in fact, they had some other ideas for that you'll see in those other slides. And I do recall listening to their meeting where their council executive director said, you know, if you want to take anything off, you want to put anything on, you have to take something off. So this request, if it were to go through, would potentially alter their work plan too.
No further questions? Out to the public on the motion to amend. Seeing none. Is there any objection to this motion to amend? Sorry, Ms. Lincoln. Ms. Ware, okay, thank you. So we'll do a roll call vote.
Please say yes, no, or abstain to the motion on the board. Mr. Whelan?
Yes.
Mr. D'Angelo? Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Platts?
Yes.
Mr. Pentney?
Yes.
Mr. Piernock?
Yes.
Mr. Pappalardo?
Yes.
Mr. Olszewski?
Yes.
Ms. Griffin?
Yes.
Ms. Ware?
No.
Ms. Sobel?
Yes.
Mr. Lucy?
No.
Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
Ms. Odell?
Yes.
Ms. Braun?
Yes.
Mr. Aristad?
Yes.
Motion passes 13-3 with no abstentions.
Any additional motions to amend the executive order? The the XCOM's recommendations. Jackie O'Dell.
So is this where I bring up the low-hanging fruit for making a recommendation to add USDA purchasing programs to? Okay, so I would look to add under for the, what's our boilerplate for Executive Order 14276 under Section 4.1, Seafood Marketing and Promotion, that the Council also include support for purchasing programs, USDA purchasing programs. Rationale being that these programs...
Hold on. Ms. Griffin will second. Sorry, go ahead.
Thanks, Melanie. I'm doing this on the fly. So rationale being that the purchasing programs that have been in operation for haddock, pollock, redfish have been essential to the groundfish fishery to date and to stabilizing markets. And we want to continue to support those efforts for that fishery and other fisheries that we manage. Thanks.
Any questions to the motion? Comments? Tobe.
Thank you. I want to strongly support this motion. There was some work at through the University of Maine and the Local Catch Network to look at the amount of support that the USDA puts forth towards seafood. They put forth 0.5% of their grant programming to promote seafood. So we definitely need to prod them to do more to help the industry. And so I'm very much in support of this motion.
Any other comments, questions around the table? Going out to the public, I see you, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you. This is weird. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm with Atlantic Cape Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. I would like to urge the council to strongly support this motion. We had a little discussion last evening, very casual discussion, and we were talking about NAFO yellowtail. And wouldn't it be in the U.S.'s best interest to have a program that maybe the USDA can on an annual basis guarantee the purchase of these yellowtail from out in NAFO waters? This would do two things: create a market for those fish that we are currently not fishing, and it would encourage owners of vessels that are equipped to go out in those waters to participate in the fishery if they had a guaranteed revenue source by the federal government. So I would strongly urge you to consider this, and I would support this. And for other fisheries also, but that's just one example. So thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any other comments from the room? I'll go online to Andrea Tomlinson.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Well, first of all, congratulations, Mr. Chair. You've made New Hampshire very proud. And congratulations to you, Melanie Griffin. Great to see a woman on the official officer role, in the official officer role. I'm Andrea Tomlinson. I'm the executive director of the New England Young Fishermen's Alliance. And to just reiterate what Councilmember Tobe Braun just said, there is a huge push in the fisheries industry right now to get USDA to pay more attention to fisheries organizations and fund them. And what Tobe was referring to is we as fisheries organizations have actually only received 0.5% of 1% of USDA funding to do any kind of seafood promotion. So we at NAFRA really do support this motion. And I also wanted to mention that we are part of the Seafood Nutrition Partnerships National Seafood Council Task Force, which I think would be a really great organization for the council to consider partnering with if you were to move forward with this motion, because they have already developed in the last 4 years a National Seafood Council Task Force, and they're moving forward to develop a National Seafood Promotion Council as well, working with this EO and also the new NOAA seafood strategy. So really in support of all of this and really in support of trying to get more domestic seafood on people's plates. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tomlinson. Oh, Mr. Lehman.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Congratulations, Dan, and congratulations, Melanie, on your appointments. Jerry Lehman, president of the New England Fishermen Stewardship Association. I strongly agree to this. The USDA contracts, especially with the ground fishery, is pretty much pumping lifeblood into industry at the moment. So we strongly support. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry Lehman. Seeing no more hands, it sounds like people are kind of in agreement. Is there any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, I think we move with consensus on that. Any further motions to amend the original executive committee's recommendations? I see Ted Platts again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move to amend that we add the that the skate complex, the species of the skate complex, be separated and managed as individual species in the most appropriate FMP based on landing data and biomass distribution and range.
Do you have a second? Anyone want to second that motion? I would accept this as motion fails with a lack of second to amend. Any further up, Ms. O'Dell?
So can I ask a question for one of the items that is in the council actions under development that is included in our packet? I don't have a motion, but I just was hoping to ask a quick question. It should be quick, and it's going to be discussed later this week. I just want to make sure I know when I'm voting what exactly I'm voting for.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So we have ecosystem component evaluation, which I'm very appreciative of that word, evaluation. It's our ongoing work at the council. It's included in this letter, and I think that's great. You know, in the clarification in this memo from the executive committee, it says that, okay, hold on, sorry. To identify stocks that may be removed from regulatory requirements for conservation and management, to evaluate undue burdens of catch, bycatch limits, prevent closures, and increase efficiency of available staff and funding resources, which I also appreciate that language as well. I think that's pretty clear. Later this week, we're going to have a discussion about some stocks that are being recommended for consideration for ecosystem components that was discussed by the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee, and some of those stocks that were listed are concerning. They're stocks that, such as witch flounder, that has had an over 90% utilization in the groundfish fishery, and I'm concerned I don't want to be supporting something that looks at creating witch flounder as an ecosystem component. Thank you.
I think there was a question there.
Yeah, thank you. So The Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee did discuss what we're working on right now through an IRA initiative. These are not; those were not recommendations to be added to an ecosystem component list or removed from FMPs. We are in the process of evaluating it. We've hired a contractor. We are working on it. We are not making any decisions about ecosystem component species through the executive order or later this week.
Thank you. I needed to get that in the record. Thanks.
Any further motions to amend on the original motion? Seeing none. So onto the main motion. We will need someone to make this as a main motion. The language is up there. So we're looking for someone to make this motion. Ms. Griffin.
Sure. So I would move to amend the EO14276. We can erase that duplicative numbering. Restoring American Seafood Competitiveness List as amended. I think, is this language correct?
No.
I think it's that we move that the council adopts. Okay, I'll reread this. To move that the council adopts the executive committee's recommendations for EO14276, Restoring American Seafood Competitiveness, as amended today, to include the following: to work with the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council to consider developing an action to change the season for the Southern New England dogfish exemption area, be expanded from May 1 through October 31st to April 1 through November 31st, and add to the allowable species possession list bluefish and sea bass. Consider developing an action to change the season. I think that's duplicative. And then under section 4.1, seafood marketing and promotion, that the council includes support for USDA purchasing programs. Sorry for on the fly there.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Looking for a second to the motion. Does not need to be seconded. Okay. thank you, attorney. So any questions, comments to the main motion as amended? Mr. Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a question on process and what the appropriate verb at the beginning of this motion is. So we're going to adopt them, but then the plan is to submit this document to the administration to say, here's our response to your executive. So does the motion need to include anything that says we're going to send it somewhere?
Doctor?
No, it does not. We've been tasked to do that, so we have to do it.
Any further questions, comments? Scott Oshesky.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just sea bass seems a little open-ended. Can we add black sea bass in there, please?
Yeah, black sea bass in that first bullet at the end.
Mr. Smith? Oh, you're all set. Any questions, comments from the public? Drew Minkiewicz.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz with the Sustainable Scalloping Fund. Congratulations, so on and so forth. The motion before you does not meet the tasking of the executive order. I've had several conversations with people back in D.C. The expectation is that the councils will come forward with a deregulatory action for every fishery. This does not achieve that, doesn't even come close to achieving that. That's not my interpretation of the executive order or like me just giving my interpretation. That's what I'm hearing directly from the people who were either authors of or are in charge of implementing it. They're also upset with the councils from last go round of not taking the deregulatory actions seriously in their mind and proposing very little. So this is only going to aggravate those feelings. I think it is no secret to all of you that there are many within the administration that wish to, for the council process to go away. I don't particularly agree with that view, but you need to know that that is a reality. So if this goes forward, it doesn't meet the moment. It doesn't meet what they're asking for. And there's, for instance, in this fishery that I'm here representing, the scallop fishery, there is nothing. There's nothing in your proposal to do any deregulatory action for scallops. We've been asking for stacking for quite some time now. We've been very open about asking for stacking. It would be a deregulatory action you could take, and it would support the fishery. Just a week ago today, we hosted an open house in New Bedford to discuss stacking. It was a very well-attended event at the Fairfield Inn. The room was full. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of support for moving forward with stacking within the fishery. And there were no substantive problems with the actual proposal for stacking. And when I talk about stacking, we're talking about two permits, one vessel. You would make the election, the permit, each permit would keep its unique identity, so everything would come over together, so there would be no increase in fishing in other fisheries. And it would be on a temporary basis, a year-by-year decision, and it would improve safety and improve economic output, you know, things that are directly called for in the executive order. So you can go ahead with this, but it's going to, you're going to receive blowback, and you're not meeting the moment. And so I'd strongly urge you to reconsider actually doing deregulations as the executive order asked for and actually having something for every fishery. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Minkiewicz. Anyone else in the room? Jeff Galen.
Yeah, thank you for the additional time, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, no comment on Drew's request, but, you know, I do appreciate the fact that the New England Council is supporting the Mid-Atlantic Council's interest in pursuing the vessel baseline restriction issue. I was really glad to see that on the list. And there's one other thing that this council could assist the Mid-Atlantic Council with simply writing a letter or supporting a letter from the Mid-Atlantic Council to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on this long-standing requirement at U.S. Fish and Wildlife that squid exports have to be inspected by the agency, which causes a lot of delays and a lot of costs for the producers in New England and the Mid-Atlantic of squid. And I really would encourage the executive committee and the council today to consider supporting the Mid-Atlantic Council's efforts in trying to make this change, which I think would only require a letter to be signed, frankly. So I'm not going to speak to all the other great ideas we had in our letter, but this is one I think that would be a pretty easy lift for New England. We've just added something else for the Mid-Atlantic here, which was, you know, wasn't discussed in this process. So it would be terrific to see a motion from a council member here to support what the MID is trying to do in reversing this Fish and Wildlife Service requirement. And I think we have some support even up in here in Gloucester with Garfo on this initiative. So this would be an area that New England Council could significantly help the squid fishery without a whole lot of heavy lifting, frankly. We would appreciate the support. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kalin. I got two hands online. Sean Gagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I indicated earlier, I would like to speak to adding support for the petition to reopen the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area to mussel and surf clam fishing. I note it's currently before GARFO, and nationally it's been submitted in response to earlier executive orders. And thus, as it's a petition that impacts a fishery managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council, but closed under New England's habitat rules. Excuse me. It is appropriate to be addressed, and thus we are just looking for support. Doesn't add any work, as Jeff was just saying. I would note that it fully meets all the objectives of the EO. It would be a big step in restoring access to what it's accounted for some years of 20% of the surf clam resource, and provides millions of dollars to small fishing communities along the Cape and New England more broadly. There's been a lot of new science since the surf clam framework was adopted, showing that the area is highly dynamic, characterized by frequent disturbance and moving sand waves. There are questions as to whether cod even use the area anymore for spawning due to ocean warming. And it's consistent with the council's main command under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is to achieve optimum yield from the fisheries on an ongoing basis, whereas habitat protections are only a utilitarian sub-concern that it has to meet the practicability requirements. In this case, given the dynamic nature of the area, it's even questionable whether a dredge impacts in the area could be considered adverse within the meaning of the law. So I strongly urge the council to support this. And I'll just close by saying we raised this issue with the Mid-Atlantic Council when it was discussing the executive order. There was support for the petition there. We're simply asking for New England Council's support for GARFO taking action on this petition, at least putting it out there for public comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gain. Last word to Ms. Tomlinson. We have you muted on your end, Andrea.
Sorry, thank you. Hi. Just two general questions about the EO presentation overall, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I noticed on the additional documents provided on the council website, in the table where the advisory panel panels for the various FMPs were asked for comment, it was very disconcerting to see that the groundfish AP, the multi-species AP, did not comment. And I was wondering if there was a provision where the council was requiring each AP to provide a comment. That was my first question, because there seemed to have been no comments at all from the groundfish AP.
As far as I know, all APs were asked to comment as outlined to the executive order 14276. Why there was a lack of response to that from some of the APs, I cannot answer that question. So they had the opportunity and they just apparently chose not to have any input.
How unfortunate. Okay. My other question is, there's a little rumor going around as far as this deregulation conversation. Could you clarify, please, Mr. Chair, is it fact that in order for the council to implement one new regulation in this deregulation process, that 12 regulations would have to be done away with for one new one to come in? Could you clarify that rumor?
I will turn to Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So maybe clarification on a couple of comments. All of the council executive directors received a letter from Assistant Administrator of NOAA Fisheries, Eugenio Pinheiro Soler, on May 6, 2025. The tasking to the executive directors was that the Secretary of Commerce shall request that each regional fishery management council, within 180 days of the date of the order, provide the Secretary of Commerce with updates to their recommendations submitted pursuant to Executive Order 13921, which was in the first Trump administration, to reduce burdens on domestic fishing and to increase production. Building upon the earlier goals, identified actions should stabilize markets, improve access, enhance economic profitability, and prevent closures. The Regional Fishery Management Councils will commit to a work plan and a schedule for implementation to ensure these actions are prioritized. This is not asking for deregulatory measures, and it's not related to the executive order where there is a regulation replacement requirement of 10 to 1. Those are separate from the executive order.
You all set, Andrea?
Okay, so it's 10 to 1, not 12 to 1.
With the caveats. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will move to the council. Obviously, we've had some discussion about this. Is there any opposition to the main motion as amended? Seeing none, I have consensus with the exception of Mr. Pentney, who will abstain. Anything further, Jamie or? Okay, moving on. We are moving into management flexibility action. We are a little bit behind time, but you know we want to get this out here, up and going. So I will turn to Dr. Cornain again. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So this presentation is on the Council's Omnibus Management Flexibility Amendment. And your goal today... is to take final action on the Omnibus Amendment to increase management flexibility and consistency. So just a little bit of background. Recent events, including executive orders, changes to the federal agency structure and staffing, and pauses in the regulatory advancement of management actions have highlighted the need for the council to increase flexibility in management and its regulatory process. So some specific examples of that include, as many of these you're aware of, the default measures in place for part of the fishing year for 2025 for the Atlantic Sea Scallops. As discussed earlier, delays for Northeast multi-species groundfish and Atlantic herring actions, capacity reductions in federal staff that support data collection all the way through to stock assessments, ecosystems, and the Council's plan development teams. And then also with stock assessments, reduction to the number of management track stock assessments for both this year and next year, and a pause in research track assessments. So the purpose and need of this action is to modify certain administrative measures across all the council's FMPs to increase management flexibility and consistency. And in doing so, you would be ensuring the requirements of the MSA and the council objectives are met. So back in April, you added this as an omnibus action to your 2025 priorities. You initiated the action and received an update on the alternatives and the action timeline in June. On September 4th, the Executive Committee reviewed a draft and provided feedback. You're scheduled today to take final action. On October 8th, the Mid-Atlantic Council will take final action on the monkfish aspects of the amendment only. And then staff will work to prepare the preliminary submission, which will go through the review process and a final submission. Hopefully all of that would just take place through the end of this year. Implementation would be as soon as possible next year. So the draft alternatives include five different actions. The first section is on specifications frequency. The second is specification setting process. The third is in-season adjustment authority. The fourth is the annual review or report. And the last is the list of framework adjustment items. So I'll walk through those in just a moment, but I just want to add some provide some summary of what the Executive Committee discussed on September 4th. They reviewed the draft amendment and they provided feedback to clarify the draft alternatives. The committee supported the staff recommendations, and we explained that there was a preliminary determination that this action qualifies for a categorical exclusion from further NEPA review because it's primarily administrative in nature, and so we would not be preparing an EA or an EIS, and therefore one of the benefits of this, by since it would qualify, is saving time and resources. We did also discuss that the option that would change the groundfish and sea scallop FMP's rollback or default provisions is less likely to qualify for a categorical exclusion and may need NEPA analysis for those changes. And so the recommendation is to move that section to consider but rejected, and for the council to consider adjusting these measures in the next available groundfish and scallop actions in order to analyze the changes along with any new specifications coming in. Okay, now an action by action summary. So the first section is on specifications frequency. When you look in the document, you'll see the summary of the alternative, and then what goes with it is the decision document. So a lot of these tables are right out of the decision document, and some of the, there's also a council staff recommendations memo that includes some additional details on why different alternatives are being put forward as recommendations. So in this section, you choose one alternative, either no action or alternative two. Under no action, you would continue the FMP by FMP approach to determining specifications frequency. When you look in that table, there's a variety of methods, 2 years, 3 years, nothing specified. But what alternative two does is it would allow the council to recommend specifications for 1 to up to 5 years across all the fishery management plans consistent with the best available science. It does not obligate the council to recommend 5 years, but it would provide the council with the option of providing anywhere from 1 to 5 years anytime it works on specifications for each of its fishery management plans. And this is one that the council staff is recommending. So a little bit more about this alternative two. It would provide greater flexibility in planning stock assessments and data updates and subsequent management actions, therefore providing a more consistent approach. It may allow the council to spread its final actions throughout the year. A lot of the final actions are in September and December. Having this approach may allow this to be spread out more across the year. Regulation changes would be made to all the FMPs with exception of spiny dogfish, no changes there. And again, council staff recommends this alternative two, which increases management flexibility and consistency across the fishery management plans. So the second action is on specification setting process. And again, you choose one alternative, either no action or the alternative two. And there are two fishery management plans that do not have a specific specification setting process. They usually would use either a framework adjustment or an amendment. And those two are the Northeast Multispecies Groundfish FMP and the Monkfish FMP. In addition, there's a note here I'll explain about skates, but under alternative two, what you would be doing is you'd be adding in this specific specification setting process for those two plans, and there is a list that the plan development teams worked on of what could be included in the specification setting process, and this would allow, you would necessarily need to develop a framework adjustment action when you do a specifications only action. This alternative also adds status determination criteria to the list of measures for the Northeast Skate Complex. Right now, those are not in the list, and so this would add to the list consistent with other fishery management plan lists. And this is being recommended also by council staff. So as you know, framework adjustments typically involve modifications to the plan that are considered minor, and they require review by the council at a minimum of 2 meetings, of which one could be a committee meeting. But specification actions are used to set harvest and catch limits for a specified period of time and reviewed by the council at a minimum of 1 meeting. So there is some time savings there. Also, alternative two would allow this expansion. Now, all of the fishery management plans would have a specifications process. So under this one, we would have regulation changes to Northeast Multispecies Monkfish and the Northeast Skate Complex Fishery Management Plans. All right, action three, in-season adjustment authority. And this one is a little bit tiered, so you either pick alternative one, no action, and if you pick alternative two, then you must select either option A or option B, and I'll walk through those. So under the no action alternative, the only fishery management plan that has in-season adjustment authority right now is the Atlantic Herring Fishery Management Plan. Under alternative two, you'd be looking to expand that authority to the other fishery management plans the council manages. And you would then specify if it would be only for basically quotas, that's option A, sub-ACLs and other specifications, or option B, which is specifications and measures as identified as specifications by each fishery management plan. And there's a list of those in the actual action. Option B would, for one thing to note, would expand what would be available for Atlantic Herring. Okay. So just want to walk through a little bit about how this process works, and maybe you recall it from last year. And I'll provide an example in just a moment, but it still requires the council to consult with the regional administrator to allow for these changes during the fishing year, and they need to be adjusted to achieve certain objectives in management and conservation, and they would be consistent with other requirements, including the Administrative Procedures Act. So what happened last year? Last year in July, we got new information in the 2024 management track stock assessment, and the council decided to respond to that after it had an analysis of by its plan development team and ASMFC's technical committee. And in July, the SSC made recommendations on fishing year specifications. So in order to respond to this new information at the time, the council did consult with the agency at its September meeting, and the council sent a letter to adjust specifications and nullify carryover. And the idea was that this should be in place in time for the start of the January fishing year, January 1 of this fishing year, excuse me. So that consultation that occurred was, you know, the letter was supported by work that the plan development team and the TC and the SSC had completed, and the council discussed all that new science and fishery information in order to make its recommendation. Notably, this was implemented in December and in time for the start of the fishing year that we're presently in, and it was published in the Federal Register. And not our council, but the Mid-Atlantic Council has a similar in-season adjustment authority for its mackerel, squid, and butterfish regulations. It's a little bit more flexible than what we presently have, but there any adjustments in this section, and that section refers to specifications and measures that are described in the regulations, are designed to ensure the specifications are not exceeded. And so any of those could be recommended for in-season adjustment in consultation with their council, with their regional administrator, anytime during the fishing year, and then there's a publication in the Federal Register. Okay, so under alternative two, any in-season action that's taken by the regional administrator under the authority will still require analysis as appropriate and in accordance with existing acts. It would allow the manager's flexibility to respond in a timely manner to updated scientific and fishery information across all of its fishery management plans. The difference between option A and option B, again, is that option A would allow for adjustments to specifications. Option B expands that to specifications and management measures as identified in each FMP's specification setting process. And regulation changes would be made to all the council's FMPs, with the exception of spiny dogfish. We're not recommending changes there. And council staff does recommend alternative two, option B, which provides the greatest flexibility of the two options. Okay. Action four includes the annual report and review. And in this section, like in previous ones, you're going to choose one alternative, either no action or alternative two. So right now, the Monkfish, Northeast Skate Complex, and Small Mesh Multispecies Fishery Management Plans require the preparation of an annual plan development team review, and in the case of small mesh multispecies, also a report. What alternative two would do is remove the requirement to prepare the report or that review. It doesn't mean that the council couldn't place this as a priority in its annual priorities, but it would remove the requirement that it be completed annually. Under alternative two, the council would have the flexibility to choose both the timing and the content of its annual reviews and reports for all of its fishery management plans. It does not prevent the council from prioritizing the preparation of this through any of its priority setting process. We would continue to prepare appropriate analysis to comply with federal statutes and during the and any development of other FMP actions. And so regulation changes would be made to monkfish, Northeast Skate Complex, and small mesh multi-species fishery management plans. Staff recommends alternative two because it increases management flexibility and consistency across the fishery management plans. Last action, action five, is to add anything from the previous sections into the list of framework adjustment items. And so the draft right now is that anything the council selects as preferred would be added to the list of framework adjustment items for the various FMPs. Regulation changes would be made to all the FMPs with the exception of spiny dogfish. And as staff recommends alternative two in all sections, then staff also recommends adding all these actions into the list of framework adjustment items as well. If you were to take action in each of those actions today under alternative two, some of the synergistic effects of that approach could be expanded tools to prevent fishery delays, improved planning of council final actions throughout the year, an ability to respond to new information in a timelier way, and improved allocation of staff resources. Again, your goal today is to take final action on this amendment, and I can take any questions, Mr. Chair, if there are any.
Thank you, Dr. Cornain. Questions for Dr. Cornain at this point on the framework presentation? Eric Hansen.
Well, thank you. I just have a question on the wording. Well, comes up quite a bit in the presentation. First off, when it talks about flexibility, where we can set specifications for 1 to up to 5 year specifications for all our fisheries management plans. Could we replace that all with each, or is all inclusive so that when we set a specification of 5 years, say, it's going to apply to all fisheries management plans? Or is each one going to be individually set as all cumulatively? You understand what I'm trying to get at?
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thanks. So this would allow the ability to set any of them for up to 5 years. Doesn't mean that we have to. The ability could be there to set scallops for up to 5 years under this action, but the council may decide to continue setting annual specifications for scallops within the scallop FMP. Does that clarify it?
Yeah, it just when it says all, I'm not sure if it's meaning all cumulatively. So in clarity, you're saying no, it's going to be, you could replace that all with each, correct?
Dr. Cornain.
Yeah, thank you for the observation. Maybe it would help if in the rationale we provide an example of how you could, for example, set specifications for 3 years for groundfish and 4 years for scallops, for example.
I don't like that analysis, but that rationale context is acceptable. Thank you.
Any further questions from the council on the framework? Jackie O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Similar to that, on section 4.4 for the annual review or report, there's the recommendation to remove the to prepare an annual review for monkfish, skate, and small mesh multi-species. but that wouldn't just, the committees may choose, it would remove the requirement that it has to be done, but the committees may choose to request that they're, because I find those, some of those to be very, very helpful, you know, to have some annual review to the committee to know, you know, what's going on in a respective fishery and get updated information. So I would like to not, it doesn't mandate that they don't happen. It just, it's not, we, okay, thank you. I'm not asking my question correctly, but we can still do it, even though we say it's not mandatory that we have to do it under the regulations.
Dr. Corney.
Of course, there is staff time and resources that it takes to prepare these annual reviews and reports. And the way that I understand this is that by eliminating the requirement, the council then discusses all staff resources under priority setting. So let's say the council wanted to do one of these for groundfish, it could set it then. We would know ahead of time at the beginning of the year. We would hope that the council would want to put it in its priorities process that way. Or follow the priorities process consistent throughout the year where you would change it. But I don't know that we'd want to necessarily that you may not want to necessarily go to the extra step of saying like committees could decide this. I think what this is saying is that the council would still have a discussion under priorities if it felt like it was appropriate on a fishery management plan by a fishery management plan basis.
Mr. Pentney.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. I mean, we support everything in here that the staff has recommended. I think there's a lot of potential for relieving some of the workload on council staff, agency staff, the council itself. I know over the years we've had situations where just because the FMP only allowed for 2-year, 3-year specifications, even though we were just going to extend those quotas and fishery allocations for another 2 or 3 years, the council had to take action and the staff had to prepare a document and we had to go through rulemaking process just to end up with really no change. And so I think, you know, extending the option for the council to move to, you know, up to 5-year specifications for all the FMPs, you know, has a lot of potential benefit. But I do think it's something that would require the council to take a look at the risk policy, to take a look at the terms of reference that are provided to the SSC, so that we don't end up in a situation always where, you know, the response is, well, we should have lower quotas in the out years because there's a lot of uncertainty. I think that does a disservice to the industry, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, represent the best science. So there's got to be a give and take on this, and I think providing the flexibility is a good first step. But then I think some additional follow-up work with the risk policy and the SSC terms of reference would be warranted. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. Any further questions from council? Mr. Lucy.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on that, hypothetically, if a 5-year spec package is chosen, we would still be reviewing these annually. So if there was, say, 2 years down the line, you wanted to change it to a 1 year because of new information, that would be part of this process. Is that correct?
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So again, as Dr. Cornett mentioned, we would want the council to prioritize what they want to do. We still have an annual priority setting process. We can't do specifications for every FMP every year. That's impossible. So we do, you know, the ability to have specifications set in the books and approved through rulemaking for up to 5 years gives us flexibility around what the council actually wants to prioritize each year. If you want to do it more frequently, that's a priority decision. But there are trade-offs, just to be clear that, you know, we're including that, you know, you can do it every year, but we, in reality, we can't do everything every year.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, I'm in full support of all these items.
Thank you, Mr. O'Toole. We haven't actually gotten to voting yet, but thumbs up. Jackie, do you have a short question?
No, I guess when we vote, I'll just reiterate what Mike just said, which gave me great ease. So thank you.
Glad to hear that. Mr. Smith, quick question?
We'll see. Quick follow-up on Bill's question, and I just want to understand this. So if we set specs for 5 years and they're published, and so we have specs on the books, is there anything to prevent us from revisiting the specs in year three if we have new information available to us, or when we set specs for 5 years, are we locked in? Probably going to come up this afternoon with Monkfish. So can you give me some clarity on how that would work?
Dr. Keefe will probably give you a better clarity. So,
thank you. Yeah, so again, setting specifications for up to 5 years doesn't mean set it, forget it, and don't think about it for 5 years. I don't think that's the council's intent. As Dr. Cornan mentioned in her synergies slide, what might result from having longer-term specifications is that we are not forced every 2 years on skates to consider, as Mr. Pentney described, having to do an entire management action, which takes about a year to develop. We might get information that says there's something new in the fishery that we might want to consider changing. If it's something of kind of an emergent need or nature, that in-season adjustment authority might be really useful. If we see something where, you know, there's been a mass mortality event or overfishing is occurring, now we don't have to wait to take action on some of these things. Alternatively, we can apply data updates that we receive from the center, some of the new types of reporting that we're going to have with our risk policy matrices, to not be stuck in the September-December final action phase anymore, that we could think about setting specifications with a little bit longer runway. So again, I will try to put this in a little bit of context. Right now, a lot of the, when we set specifications, say for herring, we set 3-year specifications. We ask the SSC for a recommendation for 3 years, but the council has operated that we update those every 2 years. So this is setting specifications for up to 5 years, but the council would have the ability to replace those or confirm them moving forward.
That's what the last thing you said was the thing I wanted to get clarity on, and the only follow-up I would have would it need to be in a council priority for that year to revisit a spec that has been set? Would that have implications for priority setting?
Yeah, again, we can't do everything every year. We all know that. That's not how we operate now. So we would be looking at information on a regular basis the way we do now. If there's a need to really reconsider specifications, then again, I think this whole package is giving us some additional tools to do that. If you want to change management measures, like through a framework or an amendment, you're going to have to prioritize that up front. We don't now, and I can't foresee this action doing anything differently around updating specs every year. The only plan we do that with is scallops. I don't see us moving towards this, actually. It's not intended to move us towards doing specs every year. It's intended to give us a little bit more flexibility around it.
I do see a question online, but I would like to hold off from the public until we actually get some motions up on the table. I believe Ms. Griffin wants to kick us off here with a motion for action one.
Sure, I'd be delighted. I'll wait for it to get on. All right, so I would move to select as a preferred alternative for action one, specifications frequency as alternative to specification frequency. And I have some rationale if I get a second.
Looking for a second. Mr. Pentney.
All right, so the ability for the council to consider setting specifications for up to 5 years consistent with best available science across all its FMPs is responsive to the current state of affairs with fisheries science. i.e. more infrequent assessments and reliance on simpler data updates. I'll just also mention, this concern about or need for the risk policy working group to engage on this, I've heard that discussed at the XCOM. I've heard staff discuss it. Mr. Petney just amplified that today. So I know I'm feeling kind of confident that that will be taken up by the work group at some point.
Thank you, Melanie. Anything to add, Mr. Petney? Nope. Okay. Questions, comments to the motion on the board? Eric Hansen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, let me say that I don't think any of our fisheries would qualify for a five-year spec. There's so many other factors that will, influence what's going to happen in the fishery, whether it's fishery-related or climate-related or anything. So I think the SSC shares that view too, listening to some of the deliberations with Monkfish. They went extra precautionary in years 3 and 4. So I don't mind setting it if it's going to be 5 years. The last 2 years are placeholders to keep the fishery open, but I think we should also, I don't know if we have a tool and toolbox that double checks something that could happen in 3 years, a review in 3 years to see if we're still on track, or if we have to go through a full specification process to confirm years 4 and 5. So that's my question right now. Is there a tool in the toolbox to review without going through a full specification process?
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So there are a number of tools that we can apply to look at things on a regular basis. I would start with requests to the Science Center for data updates, which we are right now setting the schedule for those through the NRCC and looking forward on how frequently we may be able to request those. Also looking at how the council staff may be able to acquire that information on our own, be able to query some of the regional databases. So that information can be done on a regular basis. The risk policy matrices, which will be updated with our new risk policy, some of those have been drafted and are being rolled out to the SSC this year. That includes a lot of information around fishery performance and recreational commercial fishery characteristics. So we get that aspect of it, not just the survey updates, but we get some fishery performance information. So there are several tools that we can look at on a regular basis. I think that's the plan. And as Dr. Cornan mentioned, for something like Monkfish, the way the council has operated in recent past is that we set 3-year specifications and then we don't revisit it. We have an annual review of it, but it never really results in prioritizing anything outside of that 3-year spec cycle. So we're hoping that some of this information that we can look at might allow the council to prioritize other types of management improvement measures that are not just kind of on the spec setting hamster wheel.
Okay, but my concern is we're trying to regulate fish some 5 years out, they might not even be born yet. So I have reservations for that length of specification process. I think we should, if we could set a 5-year specification process with a mandate that we review it and check it after 3 years might be helpful, but sounds like there is no mandate to do that without doing a specification process, a full process. I know we're going to be looking at everything, and then we have to go set priorities if we want to change anything. But I think the heartburn that industry has is real with a 5-year spec process.
I fully get the concern. I mean, obviously, we heard it at the SSC. We heard it at the Monkfish Skate Committee that these 5-year timelines. I also kind of point out that you are all part of the fishing community as stakeholders, whether you're state, private, industry, NGO, what have you. I mean, if you're hearing things from the industry, this is the time when we go through the priority setting process, that's when you bring those concerns back to us that, well, that's the envision, is that you'll be bringing those concerns back during this the priority setting process, and that's how we get these reviews. I mean, as Dr. O'Keefe put out, you know, we're not going to set these for 5 years, but if we're not hearing issues in the fishery, we're not seeing issues in the fishery, why would we redo something if we don't have to? If we are hearing issues, concerns, that allows us to take a look at that. But it doesn't make us have to do it every 3 years for monks, every 2 years for... It's giving us the flexibility that if there are no issues, why are we doing anything? And I understand the concern of, well, in the out years, the SSC dropped the quota by X number of percent. I get that. But if we're not hearing issues, it's kind of along those lines. Why would you change things? So I understand that, but I think this is actually giving us more opportunity to have input as a council on what we're doing in the following year, and not just following a routine schedule over and over and over again that doesn't seem to be working for us. And oh, by the way, the agency will not have the resources to handle what we've been doing in the past.
Just a follow up. I think it would be a lot more palatable to the industry if the SSC had kept status quo, and we could adjust if, you know, bring up priorities. But when you already have an extraordinary precautionary approach with a large cut, it does cause a lot of heartburn.
Definitely understand that concern for sure. Moving forward, I saw Dr. Hare. Your hand popped up before during this discussion. Do you have something?
Yeah, just kind of going back to Dr. O'Keefe's comments and Mr. Pentney's comments. I mean, the Science Center is part of this process. We're here to support the council. We can generate data updates with much less overhead than scheduling an assessment. So you can imagine this. Council sets 5-year specifications and asks the Science Center for a data update. You see something in a data update that wants you to sort of prioritize revisiting that at some interval, not necessarily a fixed 3-year or a fixed 2-year, and then you use that information to inform your priorities. And so I think the Science Center is fully supportive of, you know, this approach and providing the council the science that it needs, recognizing the capacity constraints that we're all going to face. But yeah, I mean, Dr. O'Keefe and Mr. Solano said the intent is not to set a 5-year specification and then come back 5 years from now and look and see how we've done. It's to provide my understanding is to provide the flexibility for all of us to, if you look at it and it doesn't need to be changed, then you don't need to take your priority time there and invest it. You can work in other priorities. So that's, the Science Center is fully supportive of that and will help the council as best we can.
Thank you, Dr. Hare. Megan Ware.
Thanks. I just want to speak in support of this motion. I'm thinking of something like Red Crab, where I think the entire time I've been on the council, we have not changed the quota for Red Crab, but I've been through multiple Red Crab specifications. To me, that is like a clear example of where this could be applied in a less controversial way. So I'm thinking of those types of FMPs and how we could streamline our process there. I also think I forget who said it at the head of the table, but just echo the comment that I think it's this with the marriage of the in-season action that is really kind of the silver bullet here that allows us to be efficient in how we go through frameworks or specification processes, but also reactive. If we see something new, we can come together as a council, pass a motion to do in-season action, and that goes to NOAA for their action. So I think the marriage of those two is really what's important. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Ted Platts?
Yeah, I am generally in support of this measure. I'm in support of the flexibility and the increased efficiency. My issue, Eric touched on it at the end very well. You know, the SSC at their meeting was clearly very uncomfortable with years 4 and 5. And I think this is a good idea on paper, and maybe getting 3 years from the SSC and going status quo for years 4 and 5 with the understanding that we could come and revisit that would eliminate a lot of the industry heartache. But if the SSC is going to be nervous about and uncomfortable with years 4 and 5 and be presumptively aggressive in reducing the effort, I think primarily based on the history we've had in the other direction in this region, then we're not really getting science so much as we're getting emotion, and we're getting a reflection of our history. And so, you know, my position, it would be very easy for me to support this wholeheartedly if we continued to ask the SSC for 3-year specs and had years 4 and 5 as status quo based on year 3. We, you know, there wouldn't be an issue. I think there'd be a lot of support. It's year 4 and 5 that makes the SSC uncomfortable and makes industry uncomfortable. And, you know, I think maybe we want to rethink that. You know, years 4 and 5 and asking the SSC for them rather than structuring a status quo that we can revisit just the same as exactly what we're saying, but without putting that sword over industry's head, which I think is really not somewhere we want to be.
I appreciate that. I mean, honestly, I don't feel comfortable years 4 and 5, but that's the reality that we're in. I mean, we do not have the ability to do what we've done in the past. And I understand the concern that the SSC ratcheted down monkfish and skates in the future. With this framework, if this passes all these alternatives as I hope it would move through, we actually have the ability to go back and bring it back to the SSC that if we're seeing things in the industry, that we can actually ratchet those back up. And understand, I mean, that they seem to have taken a conservative approach. This is something new, maybe how the SSC approached it. After comfortability of doing this again, maybe there's a different approach to it. I can't say, but keep in mind, this is not always talking about going downward. There is an opportunity when we consider the risk policy and how we're approaching with the new risk policy, new information that's coming in from the fishery, that gives us the ability to bring this back up and bring it to the SSC and maybe go for a bigger quota. So I'm just kind of putting that out there. This is not an all one-way approach to what we're trying to do here. Mr. Pappalardo, and then I'll finally question with Jackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations, Dan. I'm in full support of this this motion and giving this flexibility to the council. You don't need to vote against this because you're worried about one particular FMP going to 5 years. If you don't want to go out to 5 years, you can do that during the spec process or that particular FMP amendment framework process. This gives the council, should it want it, the option to go farther and longer than it currently does. So I think it's something we've all been talking about in various ways for a long time.
Thank you, John. Jackie, quick follow-up?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the comments that have already been made by Ted and by Eric. I wholeheartedly support this motion, but I'm very concerned by the discussion that occurred at the SSC that if we go out and further years, they're going to ratchet down catch. I don't see that as being, at that point, our management flexibility is creating inadvertently an unnecessary impact on the industry. I know that there's other levers where we can look at these data updates, but I feel I'm going to support this motion, but I just, as long as we are aware that, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where we're creating more instability in the fishery by supporting management flexibility because the SSC doesn't feel comfortable with it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jackie. Seeing no more hands from the council, I would like to go out to the public. Any comments on the motion on the board? None in the room. I have David Ferula online.
Thank you and congratulations to the chair and vice chair of the council, David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I guess I had a question and a follow-up question if depending upon the answer. Are scallops and groundfish in or out of this management flexibility amendment? Because I thought I heard you say that they were considered and rejected, but they're still included in all these examples and all these motions.
Dr. Corning?
Yeah, thank you for your question. In an earlier version of this document, the council considered whether it would adjust rollover or default provisions in both the groundfish and the scallop fishery management plans. That specific part of this amendment has been moved to consider but rejected.
Okay, so scallops are still in for like the in-season adjustment authority and things like that.
That's correct. So under each alternative, it discusses which FMP's regulations could change if the council selected alternative two.
Thank you.
Cole, roll call. Dr. O'Keefe, when you're ready.
Thank you. When I call your name, please say yes, no, or abstain to the motion on the board. Mr. Aristad.
Yes.
Ms. Braun.
Yes.
Ms. O'Dell.
Yes.
Mr. Hansen.
Yes.
Mr. Lucy.
Yes.
Ms. Sobel.
Yes.
Ms. Ware.
Yes.
Ms. Griffin.
Yes.
Mr. Olszewski.
Yes.
Mr. Papalardo.
Yes.
Mr. Pierdnock.
Yes.
Mr. Pentney.
Yes.
Mr. Platts.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. D'Angelo.
Yes.
Mr. Whalen.
Yes.
Motion passes with full consent.
Thank you. Ms. Griffin.
I have a motion for action two. There we go. Okay. Move to select as the preferred alternative for action two, specification setting process, alternative two, specification setting process.
Looking for a second? Ms. Ware?
Allowing specification setting in the two remaining FMPs without this flexibility, groundfish and monkfish, provides a more streamlined process for adoption of specification measures, e.g. catch limits and status determination criteria.
Anything to add, Ms. Ware?
All set.
Any questions, comments on the motion on the board? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you. So could someone explain to me how this would work for groundfish? What an example for where we would want a specification rather than, can we just consider that? I'm kind of going back to the categorical exclusion and thinking of where this is an administrative action and, we're not considering. I'm just thinking of extreme situations of quota changes that could occur potentially through the approval of a specification process that could be more impactful to an industry than maybe would be considered. So I just want to have an example of that. Thanks.
Dr. Corning.
So also this would allow for status determination criteria change for skates, just so that's clear. It would allow for a specification setting process. The type of NEPA analysis that would be necessary is a different question. So whether that would qualify for a categorical exclusion, a supplemental information report, or an environmental assessment, we have examples of specifications actions under each of those. But usually it's something that responds to a stock assessment or a data update to change the quotas and associated management measures to stay within those limits. A recent example of which would be Atlantic herring, where we have a supplemental information report that we prepared for the specifications for 2025 through 2027. For groundfish, and there's a list there, I would think of that as an action where it's really only specifications, like you're not changing something in the fishery that, like, I'm just throwing it out there, like new closed areas for some certain species or removing closed areas or so on and so on. So it would really be designed to adjust the catch limits with the best scientific information available and any measures that stay within those limits. For example, recreational, the way that you stay within the sub-ACL is bag limits, seasons, and minimum fish size. So those would be on the list under option B, isn't it? Or under on this one, for example. If the, you know, if it was, if there was a lot of, if there was a difficult stock assessment and big changes coming, I mean, we just had that difficult stock assessment go through herring, and we continue to do a specifications action with a supplemental information report. So we do have examples of those too.
Is that helpful, Jackie?
It is. Thank you. I just want to make sure that we're providing flexibility without having a an inadvertent instability or negative consequence on the fishery. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Any other further questions, comments on the motion on the board? Seeing none. Any opposition to the? Anyone from the audience? Questions, comments? Seeing none, any opposition to the motion on the board? Seeing none, motion moves. Carrie?
You got it.
Yeah. Motion passes. Ms. Griffin.
All right, I have another motion. Move to select as a preferred alternative for Action 3, In-Season Adjustment Authority, Alternative 2, In-Season Adjustment Authority, Option B, Allowance for Adjustments to Specifications and Measures Identified under Specifications Actions by FMP.
Looking for a second? Ms. Ware.
Thank you. This would expand the use of in-season adjustments to establish specifications and sub-ACLs beyond just Atlantic Herring FMP. This process provides flexibility to respond in a timely manner to updated scientific and fishery information while still providing for robust analysis under existing law, e.g. MSA, NEPA, and APA, and council input, i.e. GARFO consultation.
Anything further, Ms. Ware? Nope. Any questions, comments on the motion on the board? Seeing none from the council, any from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Any opposition to the motion on the board? Seeing none, this motion passes with consent. Ms. Griffin.
You're not getting sick of me, I got another one. All right. Move to select as a preferred alternative for Action 4, Annual Review Report. Alternative 2, remove the requirement to prepare an annual review report.
Looking for a second? Ms. Ware?
So this eliminates duplicative reporting and gives the council flexibility to choose the timing and content of annual reviews slash reports for all of the council's FMPs.
Ms. Ware? Any questions, comments from the council? Seeing none, any questions, comments from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, this one will pass as well with consent. Ms. Griffin.
I have a motion on Action 5. And I would move to select as preferred Action 5, List of Framework Adjustment Items to Add, all actions 1 through 4.
Looking for a second. Ms. Ware.
This updates the list of frameworkable items based on the Council's management flexibility decisions today.
Ms. Ware. Any questions, comments to the motion on the board? Seeing none, any questions, comments from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Any opposition to the motion on the board? Seeing none, this will pass with consent. Ms. Griffin.
One final one. I would move to submit the Omnibus Management Flexibility Amendment to NOAA Fisheries.
Looking for a second? Ms. Ware.
So as stated in the purpose, you know, this ensures that the requirements of the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act and the objectives of the council can be met more efficiently and in a manner reflective of changing regional resources and capacity to support scientific updates and regulatory processes.
No more further comment from Ms. Ware. To the council, any questions, comments? None. To the public? None. Back to the council? None. Any opposition to this? I do note one abstention from the agency. This will pass with consent, with one abstention. Thank you, Ms. Cornain, for your efforts on this. Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe. Thank you for a robust discussion. I know we needed to have this, but I think this is, in light of what we see our future is, I think this is something that will be positive. I know there's concerns, but hopefully this will alleviate the concerns as we move through this process. So we are now at our most favorite part of the time of the day, lunch, a little later than expected. Just to remind you, we would like to meet out on the beach right now in five minutes or so, probably may use the lavatories for a few moments, but we'd like to get the picture out here. We want to circle back here for 2 o'clock, kind of shorten your lunchtime period. Sorry, 2:15 lunchtime. So council staff, council folks on the beach, and we'll come back at 2:15. Thank you.